Coming up today, we review the latest iPhones and get some input from Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak on what he likes about them. Plus, we'll learn about the brainwave-powered headset that knows if drivers are distracted. And as Tesco launches its own line of ultra-budget tablet computers the same week as Amazon revamps its line, we ask, where is this market heading? Plus, we've got a brilliant Diablo 3 giveaway competition, and Liv's going to tell us all about the future of news, the whole future. All that plus your feedback coming up. This is the Wired.co.uk podcast, your weekly guide to the important and interesting from science and tech to Japanese food contraptions and DIY missions to space. I'm your host, Nate Langson. I'm the editor of Wired.co.uk.
I'm Olivia underscore Solon.
And I'm Liat Clark.
Yes, you are. Oh, hang on. Let's hear that again.
Well, I meant to say I'm the just married Liat Clark, according to my notes.
She's back, everyone. She's back. Now, we've got a massive show to get stuck into today. And later on, we are going to debate the new iPhones. Katie's going to come down and join us. She reviewed the iPhone 5C while I was reviewing the 5S. Also, don't miss the competition to win some Diablo 3 stuff. If you like free stuff, then do listen. Let's start with the news. Now, BlackBerry has been sold, sort of, it was reported this week. BlackBerry has previously said that it would consider selling itself after the years of struggling to compete in the smartphone market since the iPhone launched and since Android took over in its categories as well. And after laying off 40% of its workforce and announced its exit from the consumer marketplace, a company has stepped forward and offered to buy BlackBerry for $4.7 billion, which is about £2.9 billion. Now, this deal would take BlackBerry private and would have the business focus on enterprise products and services, security, stuff like that, something that BlackBerry's actually always been very, very good at. Now, it's really quite interesting. The company that stepped in to buy BlackBerry is called Fairfax Capital, and it's signed. And BlackBerry has signed this letter of intent to sell itself, which means there's now a six-week period where other buyers can come forward and make other bids for the company. Liv, is this good news, do you think, for BlackBerry to get sold off? Because there are rumours circulating that buying the company actually could have it stripped and sold of parts. About $2 billion, I think, of this sale is actually for patents that BlackBerry holds, which could be very interesting to other companies, maybe.
I guess it depends on who you want the good news to be for, if it's BlackBerry shareholders or BlackBerry as a brand.
Well, BBM is launching for iOS and Android. It actually launched sort of over the weekend, but it got pulled because of some problems. And that's kind of felt like one of the best things that BlackBerry still had going for it, was this kind of private messaging system that now has a lot of competition, but still a lot of people use. Do you want to hear my conspiracy theory?
Yeah.
My skeptical conspiracy part of my brain.
I would love to.
So this company that has said it would like to buy BlackBerry.
Ooh.
Owns 10% of BlackBerry already. It owns 10% of all BlackBerry shares. Mm. I wonder, and this is pure hypothesis, how much this is an attempt to drive up the share price and actually then allow someone else to step in and buy the company at a higher share price than it currently is, netting Fairfax Capital a decent return on its investment. It's not going to be a decent return because the shares were much higher when they bought them. But I do wonder this, if this is a thing. And I'm not the only person that's thought this might be an action planning process.
I mean, if we can all see through it that much, it feels like the investment community won't fall for that either. Mm.
Well, it's a bit of a sad shame, really. I mean, BlackBerry has some great products, and the Z10's great. There's a Z30 phablet thing coming out that I'm actually picking up, well, by the time you hear this. And in mid sort of 2008, which was about a year after the iPhone was first released, BlackBerry shares peaked at around an equivalent of £92 each, which at that price today would have valued the company at just under 50 billion quid. So it's, and it's being sold for just under three. So, and that's in 5 years. Like, that is a real shame, I think. But we will follow this. Liat.
Nate.
Married Liat. Talk to me about brain-powered road safety systems that knows when drivers are distracted.
Yes, this is thrilling stuff. Emotive, I don't know if you're familiar with them. They make the EEG headsets, which read your brain waves. They're now being used to detect when a driver is distracted. I mean, it's not like a commercial project. This is highlighting how bad it is. Kind of, it can be as bad as drink driving, that we do not pay attention, full attention, when we drive. So the device was integrated into a Hyundai in Western Australia, where the RAC, Royal Automobile Club, is trying to draw attention to this problem. Apparently in Australia, 46% of fatal car crashes nationwide are down to inattention, which is pretty horrifying.
Now, that's stuff like writing a text message while you're driving.
Yeah, you know, chatting to the kids, chatting to your mate next to you, checking the map, anything like that. You know, and it's not a problem that we automatically think about. There aren't any dramatic and disturbing adverts on TV, the warning of the dangers of, you know, sending a text. So what they have found out, the CEO at Emotive has talked about this task switching behavior that they discovered is probably the most common cause of inattention. And that is, like you say, things like texting or swapping radio channels. So they fitted drivers with the Epoch headset, and with its 14 sensors, it searched for fluctuations in brain waves to try and interpret when drivers were getting distracted. So they were asked to do things.
They also have sensors that detect movement as well.
Yeah,
so they know as well if you're turning your head.
Exactly, they've got accelerometers and gyroscopes, so they can basically also tell when the drivers weren't looking at the road, when they were blinking more slowly than normal, which is also a sign of getting a bit dopey, things like that, and gaze, where the gaze is flowing. So they asked drivers to wear the headset while doing things like texting, checking your map, swapping radio stations, and also they asked them to zone out, which I thought was great. They said, just drive and blank your mind and zone out and don't concentrate on driving, at a mere 15 kilometres per hour, so it was fairly safe. And they found there were very obvious peaks and troughs in the brain waves whenever they switched tasks. So you might think that you are fully aware of the road and everything you're doing when you swap the radio station, but they were seeing quite a dramatic drop or shift in your brain waves. And that was a sign that your attention has shifted. Your brain is being shared across too many tasks. So there's also kind of things that are not going to show up in the physical things that are measured by gyroscopes and accelerometers, things like emotional issues that might make you distracted that you're not maybe even aware of, but your mind is wondering. And these things were picked up as well. So what they did was they synced up the system with the car's computer software. And every time one of these issues was flagged up by the system, you know, a little alert, distracted driver, the car would automatically slow down to a safe speed, and it would only speed up again when the driver had regained his or her attention on the road. So I think it's pretty cool, and it's not something they're saying, oh, we're going to, you know, stick in cars now. This was done to highlight a problem, but I think it could be a research project.
I mean, the ramifications for this are absolutely massive. I mean, Google is investing significant amounts of money in automatic cars and you know, I think that the way things are going in the future is that certainly for things like cruise control on motorways and long drivers, or for, you know, even in truck drivers that have to drive for hours on end, these sorts of things paired with, you know, say a mesh network of GPS systems, certain elements of the car that's automated, these all actually work in tandem to prevent accidents.
Yeah, they've done a similar thing, like you say, with truck drivers. I remember reading, and they were kind of sensing, you know, if their eyelids start falling, or if they're, probably blinking for too long, then sensors go off and it tells mission control.
That was in the trucks that go into the mines in Australia, people have to do 12-hour shifts.
In Australia again?
It was in Australia. They do 12-hour shifts, and there's a very high fatality rate amongst those drivers or the people in the cars behind them if they fall asleep at the wheel, and because they're so tired, it often happens. Mm. So they had a similar system, but it was looking for the blinking of the eyes and the nodding of the head, and there would be an alarm that would go off, and the mission controller would say, are you okay? Do you need to come off duty?
Yeah, and talk to you.
And it's shown to be very successful.
There was an interesting topic I heard discussed actually on a podcast just this morning about a law that's going through or being acted upon in somewhere in the US, where they're banning the use of GPS tools for anything that is also a communications device. So they're saying, you know, that you can use this if it's a GPS system exactly, but you can't say use your phone's GPS because it is also a phone and it might distract you with X, Y, and Z.
Oh, interesting.
So even if you've got it stuck on your kind of windscreen in the same way the GPS device would be.
That makes sense. I believe it's going to be alerting you to other things all the time.
Yeah, I believe so. Let's go into space, shall we, Liv? Let's put on our spacesuits.
I've got mine on already.
Yes, it's fetching. There is a DIY mission that is aiming to send humans to the moon of Europa.
Yes.
This, I think Duncan Gear wrote this up this weekend, just gone by, and it is amazeballs.
It is amazeballs. It's quite early days, though. So this is one of the founders of an organization called Copenhagen Suborbitals. I never know how you say that. What they do, that organization does, is has built the first homemade spacecraft, or at least is trying to build a homemade spacecraft to send humans into suborbital flight. And they've done a number of engine tests. So one of the founders of Copenhagen Suborbitals, Christian von Bengsten, he has separately, it's not actually a Copenhagen Suborbitals initiative, is looking for volunteers to assist with a new mission called Objective Europa, which, as Nate mentioned, aims to send humans to Jupiter's icy moon Europa and hunt for alien life.
I was going to say, what are we going to do there? But of course, obvious answer.
Europa is actually a fascinating moon. It's one of the biggest moons out there. I think it's the fifth or maybe the sixth biggest moon, discovered, I believe, by Galileo back in the day. Yeah. Troubled man.
Yeah, so what they're doing, and they're trying to see whether it's feasible or not to do this mission, and they are buoyed slightly by the discovery of life in the sediment of Antarctic subglacial lakes that I think we reported on relatively recently. And they think that because we found this life, it could bode well for finding life below the ice-encrusted surface of Europa.
Fantastic. Very interesting. Where do you want to go, Leah? I mean, we've talked about this before with the manned voluntary one-way trips to Mars.
Yeah.
That had quite a lot of sign-ups.
No, you can't come back. I'd send along, you know, a couple more rovers first. A couple rovers.
I think the problems are much larger than the fact that people won't be coming back from this mission. The main challenge will be overcoming Jupiter's really intense gravitational pull and to safely land onto Europa and then burrow under its icy crust to find out what's going on under there.
It's a bit of moonshot thinking, Leah.
Oh, I miss those buns.
How long have you been waiting for that?
I was waiting to make that joke before we even started recording.
This morning.
Good. Yeah.
I'm pleased. Be Good. Pleased.
Tesco has been in the news this week, and we have been looking at the reasons why. And the reason is it's going to launch a new 7-inch tablet computer called the Huddle, which is spelt H-U-D-L, because apparently additional consonants and vowels are not necessary in this modern world. It's going to cost just over £100. It's got a quad-core processor. It runs Android, a modern Android, and has full access to all Android apps. It's got a camera on the front, camera on the back, and it obviously ties into Tesco's media services like Blinkbox for movie streaming and things. Now, this is going to go on sale at the end of September and is only the first of a whole line of Huddle tablets, apparently, that Tesco hopes will get into the homes of people who basically like the idea of a tablet, but find current models, even like Google's Nexus 7, which is just under £200, too expensive to justify shelling out on, particularly if they've shelled out on a phone. And it does look attractive as a device, and some of the first look reviews, I wasn't around to head over to this hands-on, but a number of other journalists went over and seemed quite impressed with this. So it's quite attractive, and I believe that if you use it with the club card, you get these double point type things, which means the effective cost comes down to about just over £60, which for a quad core 6-7 inch tablet actually could be very, very promising.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, but the other thing is Amazon this week has revamped its entire line of low cost tablets, which offer services from Amazon as well, like obviously Kindle books and movie streaming and things. And at the top of this lineup, there is a Kindle Fire HDX. There's two of these, and these basically directly replace the current Kindle Fires. There's going to be two models, an 8.9 inch version with a 2560 by 1600 pixel display. In short, that's very high. That's around the same sort of pixel density. In fact, it's probably higher pixel density than Apple's Retina display iPad, so it's very crisp screen. And then there's a 7-inch model with a 1920 by 1200 pixel screen. Again, similar sort of pixel density there. They have quad-core processors from Qualcomm under the hood, which are very, very fast. Now, this is fascinating. I really like this low-cost tablet market because now we're really starting to see some actually quite compelling Android tablets that don't cost very much money. Mm. But what's so interesting about these two is that it basically looks like Tesco wants to do with its Huddle line what Amazon has done very successfully, I think, with its Kindle Fire line, which is basically build a low-cost tablet that maybe doesn't make a great deal of money, if any money, on the actual physical device itself, but actually gets you in their ecosystem. And Tesco has so many arms to its business, even banking and, you know, obviously movie streaming and stuff like that. They sell music. They do tons of stuff.
Yeah.
This feels to me like it's a conduit to reproduce the success that Amazon's had with its Kindle tablets. What do you think?
That's really interesting. I was just, when you were saying that, I was imagining, you know, even on the very, the core products that Tesco offers, i.e. groceries, this idea of having a kind of screen that could display recipes and stuff like that and plug into your club card points and be a kind of hub within the home. And I think that's, that could be very interesting. It
makes me very anxious being a Tesco-driven world, having a one-stop device for everything Tesco.
And that makes you, makes me feel that this Tesco tablet could actually be very promising, because unlike a lot of low-cost Android tablets out there, then a lot of them are made by smaller companies. They obviously have to make money somewhere. They're not able to compete at the same level that Google can with its Nexus 7, which is very, very affordable for what's actually in the device. And the same for Android. You know, Amazon doesn't aim to make any money on its Kindles. It's basically there to provide a good platform and reading experience and things for its other products. I think Tesco could pull this off, and I think this could be a fascinating line to watch. Particularly if you imagine Tesco doing an actually a slightly higher end version of this, you know, that also has 4G or 3G at least, that ties into Tesco Mobile. I mean, this could get very fiercely competitive, and I'm fascinated by this. Well, from Tesco back to our podcast, we're going to put an ad break in our bagging area. But when we come back, Katie Collins is going to come down and she and I are going to debate the iPhone 5S and 5C, which we both reviewed. And don't forget, we've got competition still to come. We've got the future of news still to come. And we're going to talk about something colloquially perhaps called the Boris e-reader. We are still working to give you, the listener of the Why.co.uk podcast, a free download from Audible.co.uk, which has a catalogue of over 80,000 titles. And you can get access to this with a one-month free trial that costs no pounds and not a single pence to try. If you head over now to audible.co.uk/wired, there are a few clicks to go through to sign up, and then you can be browsing and downloading any book you want for free. It will make you feel better about listening to our podcast. You'll be supporting our show as well, and we absolutely cannot be more grateful for that. And you get a free book as a thank you. And you may stick around because it is a pretty good service. There is very little not to like if you head over now to audible.co.uk/wired. Let's get straight into this. It's time to mount the Technosaurus. Hello, Katie Collins.
Hello.
How is the world of Katie Collins?
Oh, just as good as ever.
Is it?
Yes.
Good. Well, we wanted to get you on the show because this week you and I have both reviewed the new iPhones. Specifically, you've been doing the 5C.
I have.
The slightly lower cost, but very much not a budget iPhone.
No.
And I've been doing the iPhone 5S. So, let's start at the top. Do you like the iPhone 5C?
I do like the iPhone 5C.
Good. I like the iPhone 5S. I think it's just worth getting that out of the way before we transition into talking about this.
I think they're both really lovely phones.
Yeah.
I mean, as we've come to expect from Apple, basically.
Yeah. Well, we're going to come to the particulars of our likes and dislikes. First, a quick little recap, I think, for the 5S. First, the 5S, that's the flagship. It replaces the 5. And it's essentially the same, but improved and a bit better. The camera, in particular, has been dramatically improved in its capabilities. The processor is apparently twice as fast. The graphics are apparently twice as fast. The processor is now 64-bit instead of 32-bit. And we'll come back to why that's important in a little while. And it's got this new fingerprint sensor technology to get rid of the need for passcodes and passwords and things like that, which is going to be absolutely fascinating. The 5C, what would you say are the sort of the key points?
So if you're familiar at all with the iPhone 5, you're basically looking at a pretty similar phone in terms of what's inside. The kind of the screen, the processor, the camera, like all these things, like pretty much the same. The defining aspect of the 5C is the case, which is not what we're used to seeing from Apple's more recent iPhones. It looks more, probably more like a 3GS, and it comes in a range of colours. So it's kind of got a plastic polycarbonate shell that sort of surrounds the back of it, and it comes in a range of colours, and is also available in white.
Now, you made a really, really interesting point in your review that I had not thought of at all, which is basically that the 5C is replacing the 5 as the slightly lower end iPhone purely to benefit the Chinese market, which Apple is trying to tackle more, because you said it's exactly the same as a range of phones that already exists over there.
Yes. Indeed. I mean, it's not really a secret that Apple's really struggled in China, whereas everywhere else in the world, it's really kind of succeeded, and it's really hoping to change its fortunes. And one of the ways that it seems to be doing this is by copying. I mean, I've got to be careful, but pretty much producing a range of colours and a phone model that looks almost exactly like a very popular phone range in Japan. In China.
China, yeah. Although you could say that actually that phone also looks quite a lot like an iPhone in terms of its design. And
yes.
That phone would not have looked like that had Apple not have come out with the iPhone to begin with.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the same for most smartphones, to be honest.
So what did you, let's move on to likes and dislikes quickly. So
yeah.
What did you like most about their 5C? What makes it a compelling device?
I think what makes it a really interesting device is that, firstly, that it is aimed at the Chinese market. Mm-hmm. Secondly, that it's a way for Apple to persuade people that perhaps don't already have like had iPods, but perhaps don't necessarily think that they need like a top of the range phone, and like a bit like, I can't justify getting this, like this is for business people or whatever. But it's giving them exactly the same experience, which I think is really great. Actually, it's a great way of like of basically making this top-end technology more accessible.
That's a really interesting point. And I think that the difference in price isn't so significant. I think it's only about £80 less than the 5S,
yeah.
But it is a very different looking device physically. Mm. What I most like about the 5S, I would say, I mean, firstly, I think the design is great. And this is, I compared this in my review to being sort of the TOC in Apple's TikTok cycle. So, you know, the TIC was the iPhone 4, and then the TOC was the 4S, and then the TIC was the iPhone 5, and then the TOC is the iPhone 5S. And, you know, this time next year, we'll probably be talking about the 6, which will probably change the design entirely.
Yeah.
But the one of the most amazing things about the 5S actually is the camera.
Mm.
And the iPhone 5's camera has always been one of the best cameras on the market. Certainly, there's been a lot of catch-up recently. The Lumia 1020 has a terrific camera. The HTC One has a very, very good camera. But the difference between the iPhone 5 and the iPhone 5S's camera, even though I knew it was going to be a bit better, I was not actually prepared for how much better it is. And there's a comparison photo on in my review on Wider.co.uk, if you look at it, of this pile of mushrooms that I found growing in a garden, in a field near me, where I live. And I took a photo in low light. It was at night, but there were sort of street lamps around. Didn't use a flash. Took the photo on the 5S, and the results, you can tell it's some mushrooms, but it's very blurry. It's very grainy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sort of blue speckled noise around and things like that. The same photo on the iPhone 5S taken at the same time is like a world apart. You can see all the lines and the definition in the in the mushroom. You can separate the blades of grass, which would really quite blurred together like a watercolor almost on the iPhone 5. It's quite astonishing how much better that camera is, and the flash is a lot better too. It's got these red lamps and LED lamps instead of just the white LEDs. That really, you know, it's not as good as like a xenon flash that you would get on a dedicated compact, but it's very good, and it's certainly better than any other LED flash I've ever used. And the fingerprint stuff does work very well, but one of the most important things to bear in mind is that this tech is so high-end that no developers are really taking advantage of it yet.
I guess that's the same for the processor, and the iPhone 5S is such a great performer. But
well, that's kind of what I mean, is that the processor, I mean, even Apple claims it's twice as powerful as a 5, and we ran a bunch of benchmarks to sort of really put in numbers sort of how much better that is. And in our testing, the numbers were twice what the 5 was in terms of its raw processing power. But it's going to take many months for developers to really start exploring exploiting that. And only even now you're starting to see apps that are out that really don't look that good on the iPhone 4S because they were designed at least for the 5. And so that jump is very significant. Yeah. And for the first few months, you're not going to see a huge difference, I don't think, between the performance of any given Apple game on the iPhone 5 and the 5S. It's going to be pushing spring, I think, before we start seeing that. Okay, and let's conclude. We like these phones.
We do.
Do we think people should buy them? Should they upgrade? Who should upgrade to an iPhone 5C?
Who should upgrade to an iPhone 5C? So if you've never owned an iPhone before, you would be blown away by the 5C. If you own an iPhone 4, you will again will think that the upgrade is just incredible. Like, you'll notice the difference in terms of how fast it is, the camera. I mean, obviously you can get the iOS 7 software on your iPhone 4, but the way that it runs is worlds apart. If you've got an iPhone 4S, you might not notice such a difference. And, you know, you'll also be kind of, if you do love the design of the iPhones, the kind of classic glass and aluminium look, you will be sacrificing that too, and that might be a problem for you. So in which case, you might want to consider the 5S instead. Mm. If you've got an iPhone 5, obviously don't bother, because it's basically the same phone repackaged.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree with you on that point. And for me, to upgrade from the 5 to the 5S, I would say don't buy out of your contract to do it, because a great deal of the features you're going to get, you can get by installing iOS 7, which is free. And really does give the existing phone, the 5, a good lick of paint. Mm. If you're on a 4S or earlier, the difference is going to be staggering. I've already had one friend who called me up and said, I've got a 4S, should I upgrade to the 5S? It's quite expensive, blah, 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 blah. And I said yes, and he got it, and he's happy as a man called Larry, who's happy. so that's the thing. But it's definitely, on day one, until you start really seeing these apps and games that really... you kind of just need to play them on the 5S or use them on the 5S. There's not quite that reason to run out and buy out of the next 6 months of your contract, let's say, and upgrade. But if you're due an upgrade and you can get a 5S instead of a 5C, then I think it's definitely worth going for. Well, you can read our reviews, respectively. If you search iPhone 5C review or iPhone 5S review on the website, you can see it. We've got a lot of comparison photos in there that we've done to sort of show the difference between some camera, older models of iPhone and new models. In Katie's and in mine, and in the 5S, do check out the mushroom picture, if nothing else, of the 5S versus the 5 in the 5S review, because it really is, when you see them side by side, it is kind of amazing. We've even had some people tweet purely about that photo. It's been pretty good. Great. Well, what did you score the 5C, by the way?
I gave it an 8 out of 10.
An 8. I gave the 5S a 9.
I think that's fair.
I think it's very fair. Thanks, Katie.
Thanks.
We've had quite an Apple-tastic week then, because, Nate, you also managed to interview Steve Wozniak.
Yeah, Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak. I did. I asked him about the iPhones. We talked about a bunch of things. We talked about smartwatches and apps and things like that. But I pulled out a bit from the interview to read here. So on the 5S and the 5C, he says, I'm usually interested in the more high-end anyway, and I love the looks of the iPhone 4 and the 5. I just love the looks and the beauty of the product. So the 5S is more like that. All it means is, oh gosh, now I've got to get three new phones to get the three 5S colors, talking about the fact that it comes in gold, silver, and black. So I'm not turned on by the 5C, but hey, maybe that's just a huge market and I'm not the person. And I think that is probably completely right, because this is a guy that owns a lot of phones. And so, as Katie was saying earlier on, the 5C is not really aimed at people, perhaps, who already have iPhones. It's to tap in a whole new market,
but
of which Steve wasn't.
Person.
Yeah.
Do you think he gets given them for free?
Or no, but he's still on the Apple payroll. Mm. He still gets a check every month, I believe, from something. So my Steve Wozniak piece, it's on the website. If you search for Steve Wozniak interview, you'll find that particularly interesting if you're keen to see his views on smartwatches. And now it's time to rub and peer into the wired crystal ball. This week, the crystal ball is showing us images of the future of news. Indeed. As eyeballed by Olivia_Solon this week, who's been writing about the future of news. Really interesting. Well, you walk us through what this is.
We're so used to hearing about news being broken and newspapers going under. But a really interesting project's been taking place with graduates from Central St Martins who've been teaming up with the publishers of The Times and The Sun, News UK, to explore the future of news and how we will consume news in the future, obviously. And so they had lots of bonkers ideas, including edible news, having local language supplements slotted into to your regular daily newspaper, and having a town crier news bard who shouts out headlines in the street.
I would love that.
Yeah, well, those were some of the sillier ones, I think. But I wanted to pick out some of my favourite ones, the ones that I think, you know, either have legs or just are worth flagging. So the first one is Boris e-readers. So, you know, you have Boris bikes where you can rent a bike. This would be a similar system, but with e-readers positioned in public spaces, which you could go up to, use your Oyster card and swipe at the e-reader, and you'd be able to read Times content in this case, or, you know, other newspaper content. And subscribers who would have their preferences preloaded in their card would be able to access all their own preferences, which I think is kind of an interesting idea.
Nice idea, but
massively impractical.
Yeah.
Well, the next one in your list is, you've headlined as responsive billboards, but frankly, I was massively disappointed when I did the edit on this piece that this wasn't Boris billboards.
No, it wasn't Boris.
Boris waving back at you.
We can't just call everything Boris something.
Boris cast.
This is an idea that you would have a digital billboard by a bus stop or wherever, and as you approach it, if you are a subscriber to a particular newspaper, over Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, suddenly it would display a personalised either ad or, more importantly, the content that you would want to see.
So perhaps I based on your
preferences, you suddenly have a big article. But it's odd, because what happens if you've then got five people, all who are subscribing,
exactly,
all with their app?
It's open. Like an epic version of shielding your paper from annoying person sat next to you in the tube. You'll have to like get an umbrella.
Shoulder surface.
And just like, yeah.
Exactly. The third one was receipt news. This is very similar to kind of Berg's little printer.
Ah, yeah, I loved that thing. I remembered that in my head, but I couldn't remember what it was called.
Yeah, so the idea that you would maybe pay for something in a shop, and when you pay with your contactless card, which would have your preferences loaded again, and then when you got your receipt, it would have a little snippet of information, maybe a page 3 girl from The Sun, or maybe, you know, a crossword or whatever you might prefer, and you'd be able to take that with you instead of a boring old plain receipt. My favourite one is really simple. It's called brand gestures. And the idea is built around the fact that people seem to identify with the media brands they read. So if you're in the Tube and people are reading the FT, that says something about them, or you're reading The Economist, or you're reading Wired, it kind of says something about who you are. But in the age of the tablet, no one knows what you're reading. People don't have a way of identifying what you're reading without obviously peering over your shoulder. So the idea here was to create a sort of gesture that a particular brand would have to turn the page. They initially, the students came up with the idea to do some ridiculous conducting of a T shape for the Times on the screen, which, you know, was annoying.
But sure, your finger is behind the tablet, so how would anyone see?
No,
but
so you do this.
They settled. No, but they settled on a kind of tilting action, and so instead of having to swipe, you could just tilt. And the idea would be if you'd have a slightly unique gesture for each brand, so that people then might learn to identify. Ah, oh, you know, I can empathise with them. That's a Guardian reader, or
you'll end up with some hilarious ones for like the last few papers that join on, like blowing on it or
yeah, I mean, it's not practical at scale, but I just think it was a really simple interaction, yeah, that nice, was just a nice subtle thing that had a role in a way that you don't necessarily expect for how people perceive themselves in the way that they're,
yeah, reading. Really interesting stuff. There's some other great examples on the site if you search for future of news and find Liv's story from earlier this week. Some really good ones. I mean, personally, I really do like the idea of having a news bard. I like the idea of maybe having someone like Brian Blessed standing on top of the Wired building who just screams out our headlines to the whole of Mayfair. It'd be absolutely fantastic.
Do you think that would be the voice of Wired?
Brian Blessed. Well, Brian Blessed actually recorded my voicemail on my phone. So if I don't answer, which is most of the time on my personal mobile, you get Brian Blessed talking about me being in Japan and that I can't get to the phone.
Amazing.
Nate Laxon, Wired. Hello. Nate can't come to the phone as he's in 22nd century Japan right now. Asshole. Once he's back with us, he'll get back to you. Arigato.
Let's move into some feedback. Now, we've got a few comments came in from last week's story of Liv's about Disney getting busy with their fingers, specifically using a finger to transmit a message secretly into your ear. I'm poking Liat's head now. There she goes. And so Sean writes in to say, my uncle used to send us a secret message like this years ago if we pulled on his finger.
Yes,
yeah.
We all know about that special message.
Mike said, hey, Disney, you didn't invent anything. Bone conduction mics were invented in 1923. Fair point. Besides, if you've got something to say, look me in the face, open your mouth and speak. Don't skulk around with some microphone poking people in the ear.
Meow.
Hard to argue that.
And, fair point.
And Steve says, this will be awesome for the espionage world. Where are the launch codes? They're in my finger. I love that. So on the emails, Liv, why don't you read this one out from Adam, who may be behind in his podcast listening schedule.
Yes. Adam said, dear Duncan and cohorts. Now,
for new listeners, Duncan hasn't been here for about 18 months.
Yes. He said, thank you for producing the podcast for wired.co.uk, which I discovered during my student teaching internship. Though my commute has changed from a cold, droll 60-minute journey in the suburbs of New Jersey to a zippy 15-minute bike ride into the Presidio of San Francisco, I still plug you in and tune out the world. Thinking back, the segments about horses and some sort of DJ mind sensory music experience stuck with me. I remember some time ago you all talked about the podcast you favour. Could you remind me?
Well, I think first I just wanted to say to Adam, who won't probably hear this if he's listening to a podcast from about a year ago, so I may have to email him back to highlight this. Podcast I listen to, we've talked about this a few times. I'm really into Stuff You Should Know, which is great. They did a fantastic one recently about how crack works, about the science of crack and some of the actually slightly racist laws that arose in America during the cocaine and crack epidemic. What else do we listen to?
Radiolab.
Oh, you like that one. I don't listen to Radiolab.
This American Life.
I used to listen to that but got bored.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I just found that a lot of the topics they picked didn't actually interest me that much, and I had so much competition for podcast listenage that I eventually zoned out of that. And I now check their Twitter feed for what the topics are, but only selectively listen to them.
Oh, you've got a new one, haven't you? A fiction.
Yeah. Welcome to Night Vale. Yeah. This is one I ignored for a while. It's kind of it's a fiction. It's not news, it's not tech, but it's sort of this spooky podcast that's supposed to come from like a radio station in this old desert town in America. And honestly, I don't know if anyone knows the old it was the War of the Worlds broadcast from Orson Welles did it, where it was so realistic at the time that people listening didn't know that they were listening to a presentation of fiction, and they actually ran into the streets with guns aimed at the sky because they thought there was a news program about aliens invading. That's sort of, it's in the vein of that. It's very darkly humorous, and I absolutely love it.
Does it teach you anything?
Nope. Nothing.
Just enjoyment.
Absolutely. It's very surreal, very bizarre, but yeah, I've been really into that one recently. And obviously things like Tech News Today and Guy Cocker's Games Podcast is great still, and that sort of thing. We've got a very long email that came in from Janet in Australia, so I've trimmed it down a bit. She has a very weird request, which is that, could you please name your podcast something that gives a bit of a clue to their origin? And she's talking about the literal file names in the podcast. Now, we currently do have them as episode -143.mp3 for this week, and she suggests things like wideuk-142.mp3 or something with a date in it. I never really considered this. It's a good suggestion, and we're going to start doing it. On the Facebook, we had a couple of comments come in about the iPhone 5S review, so we thought we'd read a couple of these out. And Aaron says, the 5S looks interesting. I don't really have an opinion on the 5C because it's just my 5 with a plastic back, but it's nice to see them stop the black metal casing. It's impossible to keep scratch-free. True that, actually. Mine is scratched to hell. The fingerprint scanner seems useful if it's reliable. I know people give Apple a hard time for making small changes to its phones every year, but in their defense, how many times can you revolutionize the wheel? I'm in the middle of my contract, though, so I can't upgrade. Seems like a fan, though, I think, possibly. And Betsy wrote in and says, the 5C looks like Fisher-Price have had a hand in the design. Like the look of the 5S, though. Wonder how many people have said that. It is very colourful, I suppose.
So if you would like to get in touch with any of your comments, you can follow us on Twitter. We're at Wired UK. We've also got a Facebook page. Or you can email us, obviously, at podcast@wired.co.uk.
It's competition time. Now, we are giving away Diablo 3. Bunch of copies, actually, on PlayStation 3. And this is the new title from Blizzard Entertainment, the sort of epic dungeon crawler, if you like. Now, according to Blizzard, Diablo 3 has been reforged for the console and lets up to four players adventure through the demonically besieged world of Sanctuary, battling hordes of monsters and horrific bosses in a quest to destroy the evil demon Diablo. I'm going to put some reverb on that, I think, in the edit. Anyway, the game came out on the 3rd of September. We're giving five listeners the chance to win a copy of the game, and I very quickly made up a way of doing this. This is how you enter to win. Email podcast@wired.co.uk and suggest if you had to pick a business person or individual in the technology world that would make for a great final boss in a game, not in Diablo necessarily, but any game, who would it be? And we've come up with some suggestions that we would like. I have chosen the final boss of a great game would be Steve Ballmer of Microsoft, well, for the next year anyway, whose special attack would be to batter you with a shower of unsold Surface RT tablets. Sorry, I made myself laugh there. Liv, who would you battle?
Well, I went for a UK-based boss, Michael Acton-Smith, who's the founder of Mind Candy, and he would be able to stab you with his guyliner.
Does he wear guyliner?
Yeah.
Does he really?
Yeah.
Well, that's just his natural beauty.
Maybe it's just his natural rimmed eyes.
Surely he'd just summon a horde of mushy monsters to eat at your feet.
Well, maybe he'd hand them multiple guyliners and they could then stab you from your feet until your feet fell off.
Man, someone needs to make this game. Liat.
Wowza. So mine's a bit more like cerebral. Mark Zuckerberg.
All right.
I mean, because he's going to read your mind.
Okay.
he's going to preempt all your movements and read your mind using his new artificial intelligence deep learning system. He will probe your brain.
He would make a great final boss.
And your every thought.
I would love to destroy Mark Zuckerberg in a video game.
Yeah.
Well, you can suggest who you would like to battle and why. We will be judging it, and our decision is, as always, final. So enter podcast@wired.co.uk. Five listeners next week are going to find out that they have won a copy of Diablo 3 on the PlayStation. And thanks to Blizzard for giving us a bunch of copies to give away. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. It's been a very long program, so I hope you enjoyed this on maybe two commutes instead of just the one that we aim it for. Get in touch, podcast@wired.co.uk, @wired.uk on Twitter, and what's the Facebook one, Leah? Facebook.com/wired.uk. Of course, exactly the same. And we'll see you in a week. In fact, next week, we've got Brian Cox, the professor, the spaceman, is going to be joining us to talk about, well, probably space. So we'll see you then.
Bye.
You've finished this week's episode of the wired.co.uk podcast. Until next week's episode, why not download the latest issue of Wired on your iPad, Android, tablet or Kindle Fire? Do so with a discount from wired.co.uk/magazine.
Your neigh is actually far quieter than your speaking voice.
I know, weird.
Can't believe Horse Ebooks was outed.